This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice and for generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find.
To those that turn away the so-called non-accepted.
To those that bring us together.
And to those living outside keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people.
To those that give up and those who do not care.
To those who abuse themselves and others.
And those who revive again.
To those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth.
To those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life,
and those who exploit it, even our own.
To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better.
To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead.
To our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth,
and her beauty we've destroyed and denied the honor that the Creator has given each individual.
The truth that lies in our hearts, all my relations.
Sequoia Ezekiwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Thursday, January 23rd at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting, and it will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting...
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
If you stop to listen, can hear their hearts beating loud. Can't keep those California Indians down.
Hello everyone, you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. For Marcus Lopez, I'm your host, Larry Smith. On today's program, plastic colonialism in the Arctic Circumpolar region in what is known as the colonial state of Alaska. As the Arctic continues to be treated as a hemispheric sink for the world's pollution, we'll get an update from an indigenous female elder and longtime activist who just returned from United Nations Environmental Program fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee. The committee is attempting to develop an internationally legally binding instrument to end plastic pollution. But in fact, it will benefit the United States, the American petroleum and chemical industries, and continue to harm life on Mother Earth. All that and more here on American Indian Airwaves.
You can hear when the moon shines bright, the lone elf in the black of the night. You can hear the whisper in the valley. And you know when Kamakani blows to the Bahu drum, it's the warriors who are marching down the mountain. Because history ain't no mystery to me.
With more than 13 million people from more than 40 ethnic groups and indigenous nations inhabiting the circumpolar north region, all face real and formidable risks and threats from the climate crisis, state violence, corporate violence, and other forms of settler colonial violence. With the annual plastic production rates doubling in 20 years to 460 million tons, plastic contributions to global warming or the climate crisis could more than double by 2060 at its current rate. The Arctic region is, in fact, a hemispheric sink where plastics and petrochemicals from the south of the Arctic region accumulate, leaving indigenous communities and nations to bear the brunt of the pollution that did not come from their traditional homelands. Our guest for the hour just returned from the United Nations Environmental Program, the fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, which took place from April 23rd to April 29th of 2024 in Ottawa, Canada. The fourth session's intended purpose is for all parties to develop a legally binding instrument that ultimately would eliminate toxic plastic productions as one way to stop killing life on Mother Earth and to help reduce the negative impacts of the climate crisis. Today on American Indian Airwaves, we go to what is known as the state of Alaska, which is home to 229 federally recognized Native American nations. Our guest resides in Alaska Native community or nation in what is known by its colonial name as the St. Lawrence Island, which is located west of mainland Alaska in the Bering Sea. In addition, our guest for the hour, Vaiwehi, is a tribal citizen from the native village of Savungna. She is a mother, grandmother, elder, and the Environmental Health and Justice Director for the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. She joins us for the hour to share her experiences at the fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee. She also provides living testimonies to the violent legacy of the American petroleum and chemical companies maiming, wounding, and killing life throughout the Arctic region. And our guest provides us an in-depth account of U.S. militarism and how the combined forms of settler colonial violence are intensifying the process of genocide throughout the region and placing all life at risk. And now we begin our interview on plastic colonialism and state corporate violence in the Arctic region with an introduction by our guest here on American Indian Airwaves.
My name is Bangunak Vaiwari. I am the daughter of the late John and Delawari. My Apawari is from Pumuk Island. My Ningyok grandmother, Ayuklek, is Uwali clan. I'm the youngest of six of my parents' children. I live and work in Anchorage on the unceded territories of the Dena Aina people. The work I do is on Sivokok, which is our traditional name for St. Lawrence Island, where we've had our own community-based project since 2000, our leadership wanted us to look for funding because a former health aide, Annie Aloha, started noticing high rates of cancers in our people, low birth weight babies and miscarriages. She was a well-respected elder and former health aide, and she tried tirelessly to get help for our people for 20 years that fell on deaf ears. And our executive director met Annie here at a women's conference in 1997, and we are continuing Annie's work. And in her words, I will fight until I melt.
Thank you. Vi, can you talk a little bit about some of the community-based projects and the work that you've been doing with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics?
We've had our own community-based project basically since 1997.
Wow.
Due to two Cold War era formerly used defense sites, former Air Force bases. And the organization I'm with, Alaska Community Action on Toxics, did a press release about the PCB levels in the blood of my people in the Anchorage Daily News. And I was a stay-at-home mom, and my youngest was four. I was a stay-at-home mom for 6 years. It was tough with one income, but we did it, and I wanted to be home with my children, my four sons. And I read the article, and it really touched me. My dad had died of cancer, and he helped build one of the former Air Force bases.
Wow.
And I had never put the two together, our cancers and the two former military bases on our island. I called my brother at the time, who was the tribal president, and he told me about ACAT, the work, the research team, and what they were doing. And later the same week, I got a job offer on my answering machine. And now I know I'm where I'm supposed to be. The Creator had other plans for me. I was thinking I'd get my degree in accounting. Most of my job experience had been in accounting, but we've been fighting to hold the military accountable since 1997. They turned their back on us. And we now know the Arctic is a hemispheric sink for persistent organic pollutants. And we're in a climate crisis. And the Arctic is warming four times faster than the rest of the globe. And this is resulting in the sequestered pops that are being released even quicker. We have legacy military toxics, persistent organic pollutants that arrive in the Arctic through air and ocean currents. And with the melting of the permafrost glaciers and ice, these sequestered pops are being released even quicker. And now to learn that the Arctic Ocean has the most microplastics is really alarming. I was hesitant to go. I'm now raising a grandson. But it was meant for me to go, and it's we're facing species die off, including fish, birds, seals, and whales. Right. We attribute them to microplastics. With the surface of the ocean warming, the krill have to go deeper, and the species that rely on that, we think are mistaking microplastics for their food, and as they go up the food chain, they bioaccumulate. And as we speak, we're seeing species die off. Our main foods are also loaded with microplastics. 90% of our homes eat only traditional foods because of our isolation. And it's our identity, it's our culture, our tradition. And our main foods, the walrus and seals, now have microplastics. So, and then we released an Arctic report on the links of climate chemicals and microplastics. I don't know if you've seen that, but there's a link on our website. So if we worked on it for a couple of years. You'll see a picture of me holding my grandson when he wasn't maybe 9 months old. Anyway, it's available on our website. And then we also, our executive director is a science, we're a science-based organization. She's a scientist, and she helped also produce Project Tender. That was released about the same time. It's about endocrine, how these toxic chemicals affect our children. And it's about environmental neurodevelopmental toxicants on environmental neurodevelopment effects on our children. So,
well, the one report on the IPEN website is the Arctic's plastic crisis, toxic threats to health, human rights, and indigenous lands from the petrochemical industry that was just released, and you were just speaking about, and that was co-produced, right, with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics that you're referring to.
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. If we can, you just came back from the fourth Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee. This is the fourth session, if you will, of the United Nations Environmental Program. And I was wondering, maybe talk a little bit about the purpose of this meeting. This is an international meeting that was held in Ottawa, as you were saying earlier. My understanding, there was approximately 480 observer organizations, including environmental NGOs, but also 196 fossil fuel and chemical industry lobbyists. And maybe talk with our listeners, talk about what your experience was, in these sessions, particularly the fourth session, but any of the previous sessions you've been to, and what was it like? To my understanding, there hasn't been a legally binding document that's been produced yet where there's consensus.
Yes, it was important for us to bring an Arctic Indigenous Peoples delegation, and there was three from my community: Delbert Pungawi, who's an elder and our Protecting Future Generations work group member, who give us advice and guidance on our Sivrokok projects. Sivrokok is our traditional name for St. Lawrence Island, and Chantal McLachok, who is our community health researcher, myself and Pamela Miller, who's our executive director. And she's also IPEN's co-chair. We left on the 20th. It took a long time to get there, and we wanted to be the conscience of these meetings, knowing that how the Arctic Ocean has the most microplastics of all the oceans, and our elders call our ocean in the Bering Sea our farm. That's where we get most of our food during our long winters, the walrus and four species of seals, and how we have lived intricately tied with our lands, airs, and waters, and the first stewards taking only what we need and not wasting anything. And, we're maybe 5 miles from my community in Sivungak or Savunga.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Vi Waihi, who's a tribal citizen of the Native Nation of Savungna. She is a mother, grandmother, elder, Indigenous activist, and the Environmental Health and Justice Director with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. She's speaking on her experiences at the fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, which took place in April of 2024. The committee's intended purpose is for all nations throughout the planet to develop a legally binding instrument to end plastic productions and stop the killing of life on Mother Earth. And now back to the interview on plastic colonization here on American Indian Airwaves.
We have cliffs, and normally there's so many cliff birds, the sky turns black and it's so loud and thunderous. From all the cliff birds, two summers ago, there were no cliff birds.
Wow.
And this is a story that Delbert shares, and my brother, and he's an older father, and his two children make a trip to the cliffs every spring, summertime. My niece and nephew love to go hunt for cliff birds, and he had to make a very difficult decision and told his young children how, from his observations, how these cliff birds were not healthy and that they couldn't eat them.
Wow.
Mind you, my brother's children love to eat those cliff birds. So this is what we're facing. So we went there to be the conscience of the delegates and to share our stories and the concerns of the fossil fuel industry. We're a heavy fossil fuel dependent state, and with the decline of gas, oil, fuel development, there's more push for plastic production, and to learn that only 8% of plastics are recycled, and there's 16,000 chemicals in the production of plastics. But also, as these microplastics through currents arrive in the Arctic, they also absorb toxic chemicals from the ocean. So it's alarming to learn that our sacred foods, our marine mammals that have sustained my people for millennia, are now loaded with microplastics. We also have learned from our community-based participatory research project that at the direction of our leadership, when we learn my people have 4 to 10 times higher PCBs than the average American in the lower 48, at their direction, we sampled everything we eat and analyzed one batch for PCBs, another batch for heavy metals. Even though PCBs were banned decades ago, they're very persistent. And we found them at one of the former bases, including, along with PCBs, pesticides, heavy metal solvents. There was also massive fuel spills, asbestos, lead, and mercury. So we sampled everything we eat. We collected over 300 samples, and it was alarming to learn that the marine mammals, blubber and rendered oil, important foods for my people, are loaded with PCBs at levels we should not be eating them for excess cancer risk. So not only are we faced with legacy military toxics, our main foods, the marine mammals, are so loaded at levels we should not be eating them for excess cancer risk. But the important piece here is that our people still feel the spiritual and nutritional benefits outweigh the risk. And then to learn that they're ending up in our bodies. These microplastics are ending up in our bodies. And we're now doing research in our children due to concerns of how these toxic chemicals can affect their endocrine disrupting chemicals. They can affect our children's ability to learn. Some people think we live in some of the harshest locations on the planet. Indigenous people's knowledge passed on for generations are knowledge of how to predict the weather. We have over 100 words for ice. Our people were able to predict the weather 1 month away. Our observations of our lands, airs, and waters have, we've been able to survive here since time immemorial, and to learn that these microplastics and persistent organic pollutants and legacy military toxics can affect our children's ability to learn. Ability to learn. How can we pass on our languages and our creation stories, our songs and dances, and our traditions and cultures if our children can't learn? So that's why it was important we went. It was very difficult to watch as it played out how industry outnumbered delegates and NGOs and indigenous people. Even the U.S. State Department and EPA had 40 people there.
Wow.
And to watch them as the same pit in my stomach I feel when I've been to Geneva, Switzerland for the Stockholm Convention, the only legally binding treaty ratified by 182 countries to ban toxic chemicals globally, to watch them, State Department and EPA in Geneva, I've been there 5 times, oppose listings of toxic chemicals to be banned globally because the U.S. is one of the largest manufacturers and user of toxic chemicals. And this is what we were up against. However, we had press conferences. We had side events, Indigenous People's Caucus. We met every morning to ensure that everybody was present in those contact groups and side events. But it was grueling in the plenary as they were working on the text of the plastics treaty, how industry, due to profit and to continue to produce plastics. And there's an endless, this is endless more society who do not take human health into account. And most of the indigenous peoples that were present, it was alarming for us to watch what played out, how our voices and other NGOs were not given opportunity to make interventions. When it finally wrapped up 3:15 a.m., I think they gave time for one intervention.
Wow.
From an NGO. So, you know, the indigenous people that were there, Arctic indigenous peoples and indigenous peoples and waste pickers and workers and those whose frontline workers who were there to make a presence and wanted our position and voices heard were not given time.
Was any kind of temporary agreement made, and were yourself and other indigenous peoples allowed to participate in those discussions and working out any type of preliminary agreement?
No. We also wanted, our role also was to ensure that the preamble recognizes the special vulnerability of Arctic indigenous people, knowing that the Arctic Ocean has the most microplastics and we're on the receiving end.
Right.
And that didn't occur, and because the Stockholm Convention preamble recognizes the special vulnerability of Arctic indigenous people because we're on the receiving end of all persistent organic pollutants. They accumulate in North Pole and South Pole and get trapped here and have nowhere else to go. So it was difficult.
You talk about being, you know, home and other indigenous peoples in the Arctic being on the receiving end and really the front lines of the receiving end, if you will. And you mentioned there was over 40, what was it, United States Environmental Protection Agency representatives there. And I can't help but think about, you know, what is the government's trust responsibility towards indigenous peoples, and also just take into consideration how much of quote-unquote federal lands make up the state of Alaska. And so I guess, you know, how do you feel or what was your reaction in addition to what you already stated earlier, but what's your feelings on that, just knowing that the government has a trust responsibility with indigenous nations, with communities, you know, back home, and knowing that you're on the front lines of receiving involuntarily all this waste, all this plastic waste, which can be connected back to, you know, the extractive industries and petroleum.
Yes, you know, to watch out what's played in the plenary industry and states that were pushing for relaxed text in the treaty, and to watch the U.S. government, State Department staff and EPA right there among them, who had no respect. They would uphold the meeting for a couple hours at a time, just negotiating how, pushing for language that's not so protective of communities like ours, or waste pickers, or other workers, or indigenous people from the nation that are feeling the, who have the most health harms associated with the microplastics, and how they do not take public health into account. And the United States government has never had government-to-government consultation. And when we meet with the federal government, they don't bring their decision makers. When we bring our tribal presidents to these rooms, they always tell us they'll get back with us, but never do. And I got appointed by the Biden administration on the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. I'm serving my second year, second term, a two-year second term. And we're fortunate we own our island. We opted out of the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, but to watch other tribes in our state and throughout the nation struggling to pull our water and land air protectors, having to fight for decades to get, to make measures are in place to protect our communities. A lot of them are adjacent to industries or development, or adjacent to our hunting, food gathering locations, and to protect our relatives who we believe give themselves up to, so that we can live as Sivokahipik people and other indigenous tribes and groups in the nation who just are rightfully, whose lands, airs, and were stolen.
Yeah.
And to see this play out today is just...
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Vi Waihi, who's a tribal citizen of the Native Nation of Savona. She is a mother, grandmother, elder, indigenous activist, and the Environmental Health and Justice Director with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. She's speaking on her experiences at the fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, which took place in April of 2024. The committee's intended purpose is for all nations throughout the planet to develop a legally binding instrument to end plastic productions and stop the killing of life on Mother Earth. And now back to the interview on plastic colonization here on American Indian Airwaves.
That we're seeing the most, there's an equity, there's an imbalance in equity. We have some of the most disproportionate communities in the nation whose basic needs to are not being met, including clean air, clean water, toxic-free food. To watch it, I think genocide is still continuing. And to watch it play out over and over, and all we want is protection for our children and future generations, because help is not coming fast enough for my generation. My father died of cancer at 69. That's too young. My mother had a stillborn child after me, heart disease, strokes, cancer, diabetes, and mental health harms. We buried my brother to cancer 2 years ago. I'm a cancer survivor, and I've had three miscarriages. So I do this work because I'm a Sivok Akhyipik grandmother, to make sure measures are in place to protect our most vulnerable, our children, who have a right to snow, who have a right to go hunting for walrus and seals on the ice. But if there's no ice, we can't hunt, because the marine mammals we hunt are also ice dependent. Our freezers are empty if there's no ice for us to hunt. These are burdens we didn't create.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves on plastic colonization up in the Arctic region and its impact on Indigenous peoples, Mother Earth. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
I was looking at myself very alive. I am my ancestors, my mother's stolen grave. Wipe my face from the bright to the this land creation came. You still take. Oh, and you still take. Sterilized women who cannot give birth. Strip my womb of Mother Earth. Remove my future, leaving no trace to say that I'm a non-existent race. I cannot claim from where I came. You hear the truth, no guilt, no shame. I cannot claim from where I came. You hear the truth, but no guilt, no shame. And Indigenous world and mind, the indigenous body and soul, carries a cry from the center of the earth, the center of the earth. Hey, if you wipe away these people, you will wipe away protection that provides.
You Still Take by Profay here on American Indian Airwaves. And now we go back to the second part of our interview with Vai Waihi. She is a mother, grandmother, elder, activist, and the Environmental Health and Justice Director with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. We're speaking on plastic colonization and its impact, as well as militarization and its impact on Mother Earth up in the Arctic region. And now back to the interview. Not only that, is the burdens of being forced to go to the stores to purchase processed foods or non-traditional foods is extremely high, as I understand, and that makes it harder for the people back home to to survive in non-traditional ways because of the lack of traditional foods that are available.
That's correct. In my community, we're 140 miles southwest of Nome on the mainland. We're closer to Siberia and Russia than the mainland. Everything has to be flown in. Sometimes there's no planes for a week or more.
Wow.
The only place, only way to get to our island is by bush plane.
Mm.
And what the store sells is highly processed canned food.
Mm.
And we never get fresh produce because things have to be flown in. Mm. And it's a food security issue.
Yeah.
And the destruction of our lands, air, and waters, ecological grief our people feel and have to face, trying to put food on the table. And you know, when there's a commercial fishery crash, those commercial fishermen get monetary aid, right? But indigenous communities that rely on land and ocean do not.
Mm. In talking about how the economic hurdles, but just trying to live, you know, in accordance to your own tradition, and I know, you know, where you're talking about plastic, the extractive industries, and all these different forms of genocide that continues from generation to generation, but really compounds from one generation to the next. And it just, you know, it sounds like, you know, we're at a critical juncture. I know some prophecies talk about a time of uncertainty. And in talking about the settler colonial legacy of pollution from plastics, from, you know, the oil industry, and the legacy of the United States and other settler colonial countries, and even some corporations treated the Arctic as a dumping ground for toxic and hazardous waste for decades. And I was wondering if maybe you could speak to that and how it relates to making things worse in the work that you've been doing along with other indigenous peoples and other allies.
You know, most people think Alaska's the last frontier and pristine. We have the most coastline of any state in the nation, and so many of we have a big state, and we have 229 federally recognized tribes. And the nation, there's, I believe, 573. So most tribes in the 20-plus years I've been doing this, most tribes are against development that is destructive to our lands, air, and waters, because, as I mentioned, they're in close proximity to our homes, hunting and food gathering locations, a way of life we've lived, living off the land and ocean as our Creator intended. Our Creator gave us everything we ever needed. Mm. And there's 700 current and formerly used defense sites in our state.
Wow.
During the Cold War, United States government made bases all along the top of Alaska, west coast, all down in the Aleutians, even down here in South Central, because of our proximity to Russia.
Mm.
And we have two on our island that there was even an agreement the military signed with our tribe. Our tribe recognized the importance of the seal haulouts and other vulnerable locations that was in that agreement. Basically, that we wanted our lands turned back in the same condition as when we turned it over.
Mm.
And they've never honored that agreement. and Northeast Cape was abandoned. It was like a ghost town, several hundred personnel, and at Gambo on the other end of our island, they buried everything. Mm. When they came, they brought everything they ever needed for 15 years. And then all these current and formerly used defense sites and were still important. Military presence is coming back because of the war, all for national security. And then the proposed Willow Project, the Ambler Road, the graphite mine, yeah, which the military submitted funding for wow, graphite mining in my region.
Wow.
There's 32 formerly used defense sites in the Norton Sound region, and three are still classified. And Northeast Cape, on our island, ranked high enough for the National Priorities List or Superfund, but we can never get the rating.
Wow!
And it's still classified. It's not that we're against development. There's so much potential for renewable energy. And our state doesn't even recognize our tribes, and we're a heavy fossil fuel dependent state, and there's so many legacy abandoned development and mines throughout the state, and this proposed Donlin Gold, you know, Pebble got a lot of funding and people backed it up, it had a lot of attention, but Donlin Gold would even be more destructive.
Yeah.
And then the Red Dog Mine is one of the largest emitters of pollution in the nation.
Mm.
And it's not that we're against development. Alaska has so much potential. And we went up to Nuiqsut, the tribal administrator wanted us to train their youth council to do their own air monitoring. And we were called alarmists that we were against jobs. And Conoco, as soon as we left, posted all throughout their community of how safe it was. But then Nuiqsut is surrounded by oil wells. And every day at 6 p.m., the whole community shakes from the blasting.
Wow.
For the roads that they're building for more wells in that community. Mm. And people generally come to our organization after they've exhausted all efforts to get help for themselves, their family, or community. So we're a small, nonprofit, woman-led organization. All of our board members are women, majority of them Alaska Native women. And we're all passionate to hold polluters accountable and believe we all have a right to clean air, clean water, and toxic-free food.
Thank you for that. And I know, in sharing your words with our listeners, you know, in the past when we've talked about, you know, pollution and the oil industry and the extractive industries in general, you know, I can't help but not talk about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and LGBTQI plus peoples because of that relationship and how the extractive industry really provides, I don't want to say cover, but really structures that kind of heinous crimes against Indigenous community members. And I know we've, with other Indigenous women, we've had those conversations, but I wanted to bring that up in particular because May 5th was, you know, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Day. And so maybe your thoughts on that in relationship with just the work that you and other Indigenous women have been doing over the decades. And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Vi Waihi, who is a tribal citizen of the Native Nation of Savungna. She is a mother, grandmother, elder, indigenous activist, and the Environmental Health and Justice Director with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. She's speaking on her experiences at the fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, which took place in April of 2024. The committee's intended purpose is for all nations throughout the planet to develop a legally binding instrument to end plastic productions and stop the killing of life on Mother Earth. And now back to the interview on plastic colonization here on American Indian Airwaves.
Yes. I mentioned in Ottawa that nobody was talking about the missing and murdered indigenous women because these industries, fossil fuel industry, they're man camps, right?
Yeah.
There's man camps, and that's where a lot of our women end up missing and murdered. Mm. And my niece got murdered 3 months ago, and it's heart-wrenching that we are still being, that our lives and our women are not, are preyed upon, and that, you know, as women and, you know, we're life givers. Our womb is our child's first environment. We carry our children and life givers and nurturers and caretakers of our families, our communities and clans, and our indigenous people are not valued, that we're still, you know, kill the Indian, save the land. Still today, we are fighting for our basic rights to health, our dignity as first people in this nation, where our lands and waters were stolen, our children were killed, our women and children, and, you know, the most enlistments in the nation come from our communities, and they turn their back on us. Mm. We still don't have clean running water in some of our communities in our region. You know, our basic right to health, human right to food and subsistence, free prior informed consent, and self-determination, and how this continues in this day and age, how we still have to fight for our basic needs.
You mentioned, thank you, hello, for your good words, and you talked about women as life givers and essential, the foundations of really all of our communities and nations, and just the perpetual violence against women, from Mother Earth to all of our women that are life givers. And coming back to, you know, plastic, you know, so many babies that are developing in their mother's wombs, that is their first exposure to plastic, and babies are born with plastic along with, you know, some of these other birth defects that you mentioned earlier. And I wanted to connect the plastic and the conference back to the words you just shared with our listeners, but I wanted to ask about, you know, this idea of a just transition, because I know in the report that was just published that you worked on, that you spoke about earlier, right, calling for a just transition and I think a regenerative economy. And for our listeners, can you talk about what that means and what does that mean for you and other indigenous peoples in calling for this just transition?
So that we can continue, like my grandchild can continue as a Sivokok Yupik child who will grow into a young man and man his identity, our place. You know, we all have roles in our communities. Our men who go hunting, who just finished hunting for bowhead whale. We cultures and traditions passed on for centuries to live a way of life in unity with our lands, airs, and wildlife and our relatives that have given themselves up so that our traditions, our cultures, our languages, our songs and dances, and our identity can continue as stewards of our lands, airs, and waters, and just transition. You know, we thrived before Western contact. It's our right to, throughout the nation and globe, indigenous people, black, brown people, low-income people are where... I never knew there was so much injustice globally until I started this work. To learn that industries do not value black, brown communities, fence line communities, even poor white communities who are only taking what they need to continue to who thrived before Western contact, and now all we want is the pollution to end so that we can coexist with our lands, air, and waters as our ancestors and did before, and so to live in harmony with our resources and being stewards and just transition from endless more society, you know, single-use plastic production of plastics and industries and decision makers who are driven by greed and profit and power, who do not take human health into account. So it just boils down to profit and greed and power. Whereas we have lived as, you know, as I mentioned, everybody in our communities, we help each other out. We have elder widows who lost their husbands, so their relatives ensure make sure that they have food, that they share their food, and that they are taken care of, and close-knit communities. And I never experienced racism until I left our island. I came from a loving, nurturing family. When we moved to the mainland, because there was no high school on our island in 1967, I had never experienced racism. And I was made to feel shame because I didn't know how to speak English. And I'm a recovering addict alcoholic. I share my story. I had to overcome that to be where I am today. And I know our people need help. So I tried to give back because the shame I felt, and I turned to drugs and alcohol at 13. And I'm finally comfortable in my own skin. And I've done a lot of healing. And now we're losing so many youth today because in my communities, these toxic chemicals have the ability to change our minds and bodies. And we sample and collect little stickleback because 70% of the stickleback reproductive system is same like humans. 70% of the little fish reproductive system is same like humans. The male fish is producing glue a female makes for her fish, I mean for her eggs. A male fish is producing glue a female makes for her eggs. So our boys are getting feminized. And this mirrors what we are seeing in my community.
Wow.
This is why I do this work of how the continuing manufacturers of 130,000 chemicals, only a handful are ever tested for their safety before they're put on the market. We're being exposed without our consent in our homes, workplaces, and communities like mine because of where we live in the Arctic. We now know the Arctic is a hemispheric sink for persistent organic pollutants, and now the Arctic Ocean having the most microplastics, and the production of microplastics. I just learned that microplastics can metastasize cancer. If someone has had cancer, microplastics can metastasize cancer. That would be alarming. We all should be up, you know, we should all be up in arms for our health and well-being. But that is never taken into account, but only greed and profit.
The moment of silence is over.
And we were listening to Vai Waihi, who is a tribal citizen of the Native Nation of Savungna. She's a mother, grandmother, elder, indigenous environmental activist, and she is the Environmental Health and Justice Director with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. For more information on the organization, you can visit their website at www.
You're tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
By the mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your